Joining me tonight is the one and only Guy Forsyth, who's been creating incredible Texas music in Austin for some 20 years now. And I'm a big fan and proponent of your tunes. I've been looking forward to talking with you on the show for years, and that is the truth. I've actually been trying to work out an interview for a long time, and I just haven't quite hit the right people. So thank you, Guy, for joining Notably Texan tonight.
You are very welcome. Thanks for taking time to talk about music. It means a lot for musicians of all stripes to have this sort of conversation on the air, because there's a lot of great music out there that you just never hear about.
Right.
And so thank you very much for your attention, and to everybody out there in Radiolab.
Hey, Guy's latest album, The Freedom to Fail, is available now, amongst other places, at his website, guyforsyth.com. Let me spell Forsyth for those not in the know. It's Forsyth. I'm sure you're sick of having to spell that for everybody, too, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a running gag. I always say it's like, yes, it's available at the website, guyforsyth.com, a super secret website for people who can spell Forsyth.
I like it. And I want to talk about the website a little bit later, because I love your site, man. But I want to kind of go back and talk a little bit about your bio. You grew up in Missouri, right?
Well, I was born in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
I lived on both coasts. I lived in New York, Connecticut, California, Kansas City.
Wow.
My dad worked for TWA when I was a kid, the airline. So it was sort of like being an Army brat, because we lived 6 months here and 9 months here.
Yes.
But I've had family. I've always had family, at least for the length of my life. I've always had family in Texas. My grandfather on my mom's side lived in Houston, and I still have a lot of family living in Houston. I'm in Austin.
Right.
Although I wasn't born here, ever since I was a little kid, every year we'd be coming down to Texas.
Okay.
And so I at least had a good, you know, introduction.
Sure.
And I got here as fast as I could, as the saying.
I know you did. I think it was in 1990 that you arrived in Austin. And was it family that kind of led your path here down south?
No. It was a rush to the bottom. It was I moved to Austin specifically for the music scene. I had been working as a stuntman at Renaissance festivals, doing choreographed fights and physical clowning.
Okay.
I was working at the Texas Fair. I had gotten down to Austin, ended up on 6th Street at a little bar called Joe's Generic Bar, which I ended up spending, you know, a good 5 years working at.
Okay.
And there was a great blues band playing there, and they were playing for tips. There was no money at the door. There was just a guy, a barker outside, you know, going, "Hey, got some great live music. Come on in."
Sure.
And I went in, and I ended up fitting in with the band, playing harp with the band, and they passed the tip jar around. And I had just been working at Renaissance festivals, and I had been working at Tip Jar already.
Okay.
And doing the stuntman gig, you would perform for 2 days, and then you would heal for 5.
Oh, it's man.
Like being on it's almost like the rodeo circuit, or something like that.
It was sure.
Kind of a rough way to make a living, and not a bad way to make a living when you're 19. Harder to think of it as something you're going to continue to do.
No doubt. That is very interesting, man. I'm not surprised that the music scene would have led you to Austin. It certainly brings plenty of others down this way. And, man, I'm so glad that you did.
The town has been really, really good to me in that I've been able to make a living playing music, mostly original music, and certainly all music that I want to play.
Yes.
And that is a real luxury. I'm certainly not rich. I'm certainly not even what you would call well off, but I have been able to make a living at it. It's almost like a 20-year vacation. I know more about business now and the sort of streetwise side of the industry and about music law than I ever would have dreamed that I would ever need to know.
Right.
Because to make a living as an artist, you really do have to struggle. And these particular times, even in Austin, are very difficult times.
Sure.
For independent musicians and independent artists of all stripes.
And music right now is just kind of in a turbulent state, I would say, the music industry, right?
Yeah, the effect that technology has had on musicians is that we live in a time where there's music available to everybody, everywhere, all the time. Almost everyone who's hearing this has a phone in their pocket that they could be listening to music on if they wanted to.
Right.
Every car has a radio. Every store that you walk into has music playing in it. every time you, well, not every time you get put on hold, but most of the time you get put on hold, there's music. There's music everywhere in our modern life. A lot of times we're using that music to cover up the sound of the modern, of our modern life in the same way that we burn incense to cover up the stink of the cat box. So, you know, music is everywhere. There's never been a time when humans have been experiencing more music. Never been a time when there's been less people actually playing it. Because before recorded music, if you wanted to have music around the house, you got your kid piano lessons. If you were going to have a dance recital, you had to have somebody there to play the piano. If you were going to, you know, like even in silent movie theaters, there was a guy playing the piano.
Yes.
So there'd be some sound. Well, all of those jobs are gone. That just doesn't happen anymore. Even on Broadway, you see less and less actual live musicians playing music.
Wow.
Which is a real shame. I mean, because there is something totally different about live music and recorded music. I like making records. I like listening to records.
Sure.
But that is no substitute for being a part of a live music experience. And I wanted to be a live musician. I wanted to be a part of the social ritual of being in the room with people and playing together.
Man, you talk a lot like you write. I got to say, you it's just poetry that comes out of your mouth, guy.
gosh.
I know. I'm your ego, man. You're gonna have to keep it in check.
You're a brutal interviewer, man. It's hard.
These are the hard investigative questions I'm asking here tonight. Guy, it was in your early years in Texas that you co-formed the band Asylum Street Spankers. First off, for folks that don't know, can you explain the band name?
Yes. If you look at an old map of Austin, Texas, the road which became South Lamar, or Lamar, both north and south of the river,
okay,
that goes past the state school, it used to be called Asylum Avenue because the state school used to be called the Asylum.
Right.
And so on this old map that I found at the Elizabeth May Museum, which is in Hyde Park, and I used to live right next to it, so I've been in there one day and I noticed this. It says Asylum Avenue. I had this idea to have an all-acoustic band because I really liked a lot of old music. And at the time, most of the music that I was playing was more electric blues and sort of like, you know, amplified harmonica, electric guitar.
Gotcha.
I constantly found myself coming back to recordings from the 1920s and 1930s, what you would call pre-World War II music.
Yes.
Because World War II changed the record industry because all the resources that you would use to make records ended up going to the war effort.
Right.
Part of the reason why I play music now is I stumbled upon recordings of Blind Willie Johnson and Robert Johnson when I was a kid at the library in Kansas City.
Really?
And in that music, I heard something totally different than what I was hearing on the radio. This would have been in the 80s. And at that time, if you can imagine the music that was, you know, on the radio.
Oh, sure.
It was like, you know, Duran Duran and Journey and, right. And some really skilled music, but also music that was very much a product already of the music industry. I mean, we didn't dream how bad it was going to get then.
But, yeah, right.
But at the time, still, the whole orchestral rock or prog rock, progressive rock, it didn't really answer a lot of the really big life questions in a way that, say, the gospel music that was being made in the 1920s and 30s. Did.
Not a lot of substance in those 80s tunes, per se.
Well, I mean, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, or maybe I'm talking around it, but there's something in those early recordings, the first time in history where recording was cheap and portable enough, and that means Alan Lomax with a 300-pound wire recorder in the trunk of his car.
Yes.
Could go into the field or book a hotel room and bring local musicians in to play music that wasn't the music that was being heard, you know, on Broadway or being rebroadcast in the 1930s from New York so that you would hear it in L.A., but rather the music that already existed and music made you know, in small batches for the people who were going to consume it.
Right.
There's a reason why you make music like that, and it's not to be famous, and it's not to make a lot of money. It might be so you don't have to get behind the plow.
Sure.
But that's music that kept people alive in some of the most nightmarish situations that we can imagine. There's some real magic in them. There's some real power in that. That sets a really high bar for what music can be. It's not about selling trucks. It's not about getting your millions. At that time, it wasn't about the sort of financial freedom that we imagine that rock stars have, where they just can do whatever they want and they never have to pay for it. You never have to wear the same pair of socks twice.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the sort of mythos about the music that I was growing up around.
Sure.
The sort of prog rock, you know, like where, you know, you wanted to be a rock star because rock stars could do anything.
Right.
They got away with everything. And they, you know, they didn't have any responsibility. They were perfectly free. And all they had to do was be themselves. And,
yeah.
And so, God, that sounds so great. You know, who wouldn't want that?
I know.
Then there's this other type of music that I was lucky enough to stumble upon because I was a white kid in the suburbs of Kansas City. And I didn't have any sort of organic connection with this music whatsoever.
Right.
Other than when I heard it, I was like, oh, my God, there's something that is so powerful here that I can hear it even through this scratchy 78 analog recording, 70 years old. I just, you know, I was like, oh, my God, there's just, I don't know what, I don't even know what to call this. I just, whatever this is, it captivated me.
Isn't it amazing how it resonates all those years later?
Yeah, the way that even now, if you put on Blind Willie Johnson or Robert Johnson or you know, Washington Phillips, the music will still, and even talking about it, I'm getting chicken skin on my arms, that it still is unmistakably beautiful and more human than almost everything that I hear in my day, even if I'm listening to music and you know, and I'm playing music with people. It's just, there's something that's so human about it and so real. It leaves me speechless. Baby, your love. Oh. See what the dawn has done. Set the dawn. Get worried. Set the dawn. Get worried. Set the dawn. Get worried. For the world is most done. I really did have an epiphany. Like, I have to find some way to connect with that energy. Whatever that thing is, that's why I'm here. That music can get people through the worst of times in a way that, you know, drugs, sex, and money won't necessarily.
Guy Forsythe is my guest tonight on Notably Texan. This is 88.9 KETR. Now, Guy, if I've counted them up correctly, I think you've released a total of 7 studio albums to date, not to mention several live recordings. And speaking of live recordings, man, I still can't stop playing stuff from that double disc set, Unrepentant Schizophrenic Americana, partially because I just love to say the title of the album on the air, but there's just some really cool recordings on there. But I wanted to see if we could go back to kind of the early days of your solo career, because you ended up leaving the Spankers in around 1997, but you had actually already put out a couple of your own solo releases leading up to that. And I realize that this question alone probably could fill up our whole interview, but can you kind of encapsulate some of the dire times that fell upon your label that you were on in the early days?
Oh, sure. I after I moved to Austin, I started playing on street corners. I worked my way into places like Joe's Generic Bar, where I was playing for tips. But shortly thereafter, I was able to land a regular Sunday gig at Clifford Antone's Club Antone.
Yes.
Which is Austin's home of the blues. That, for me, was, I felt like at that point I had made it.
Yeah.
I had gone from listening to James Cotton on records to smoking dope with James Cotton out back of Antone's.
Okay.
And for me, it was like, wow! That's it. I did it.
Right.
I made it. And I loved it. And there was a sort of a family attitude toward the club. People took care of each other. It was a really nice, a nice culture of music surrounding it. I signed a contract with at the Antone's Record Company. Shortly thereafter, Clifford got in a lot of legal trouble for moving marijuana and ended up losing control of the club and the record label and the record store.
Wow.
The people who got control of it were not only bad businessmen, but were very unethical businessmen. They took advantage of a lot of different people and ran the business into the ground, took all the money that they could, and spent it themselves.
Goodness.
Yeah. So, and I've been a full-time musician for 20 years, and anybody who has a story with more than one act in it in the business has a similar story to this, because artists have a difficult time understanding business from a, you know, like a business perspective, which
yeah.
As opposed to a spiritual approach, I don't mean to overgeneralize here because everybody's different.
Of course.
My best advice to anybody out there who wants to be a musician is get a business degree.
That's good advice, man.
You know, like you would learn martial arts for self-defense.
I like that. Yeah, that's good thinking.
Because you have to have a certain amount of empathy in order to convey emotion, in order to know what matters to people.
That's a good point.
And it's through music that we learn empathy. And so that's another important thing. And it's through empathy that we have a community, that we know how to work together, and that we watch each other's back. All of that is what civilization is all about. If you don't have empathy, you don't have civilization. You have something else. Musicians, being empathetic and optimistic, like I was, I felt like, well, I'm going to do the best job that I could. You know, like I didn't pay much attention to the terms of the contract.
Yeah.
So I signed what they called a industry standard contract without the benefit of a lawyer. So I got a horrible deal that required the record label to do absolutely nothing. Then I was in this contract, this 3-year contract, or this 3-record contract that should have also been 5 years long, but it was improperly dated. So I was just in this forever contract that I couldn't fulfill and that they wouldn't let me out of.
Oh,
and
geez.
I didn't have the money to get a lawyer to try to fight it. And so I was just in this weird zone where it was in the midst of that awful situation, that awful, helpless situation, that I started the Asylum Street Strikers because I wanted to do something different. I knew some people that liked a lot of this old music. My buddy Whammo had great musical taste and excellent skills and was totally insane. And so he was a perfect one. I knew Christina Mars when she was a barista working at Quackenbush's on the drag. And when I was busking, playing guitar on the streets, she would come out on her coffee break and sing Bessie Smith songs with me.
Oh, wow.
And so this group of musicians sort of fell together almost in a really chaotic, unintentional way. The band just showed up one day and seemed to be the right thing at the right time and the right sort of reaction to the other sort of things that were going on in the music scene. You know, we joked it was alternative.
That's so great, man. And those recordings still resound, you know, so well to this day. I know the band officially broke up. I think it was in 2011, the Asylum Street Spankers did. But there are people, obviously, in Texas and far beyond that still will refer to Spankers tunes. And I just think that's a great legacy, kind of a reintroduction of some of this music from the 20s and 30s that you guys really have done a lot for preserving these sounds and enabling whole new generations to hear them in a way, too.
I hear a lot more of that music now than I did when the Spankers were first around.
Yeah?
And I don't know. I can't really say that. I think that that's because of the Spankers. I think it was a reaction. You know, I think
sure.
I think that music has so much worth that if people discover it, it goes over well.
If you want to please your captain, sink 'em low, boy, raise 'em high.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to kind of persevere through those tribulations you had with your first experience with a record label, and you came out of the ashes of all that and created your own label, Small and Nimble Records. Awesome name, by the way, for your label. You came back with a lot of releases. One of my favorites is the 2005 release, Love Songs For and Against. I think that one really kind of holds up quite well today, in my opinion. A lot of people kind of count that as one of their favorites of yours over the years.
That's the first record that I made with Mark Addison, and Mark Addison helped co-write a number of the songs, also Nina Singh. helped co-write some of the songs, and there's a song that I wrote with Papa Molly on that record, and that was the first record that I did any co-writing on.
Okay.
Before that, the records that I'd made were, it was either songs that I'd written, or each of the records before that had covers on it, at least some. And that was interesting. I was working with Kevin Womack as a manager at that time, and so I had worked with Kevin, and he knew and he knew Mark Addison. Mark Addison had played on one of the records that I had done for the Antones record label, Can You Live Without? Mark continued to produce records here in Austin, which he still does today. He's an excellent producer and a great musician. And the plan was to try to get me on a large record label, which is, of course, that was the dream of everybody.
Sure.
Everybody's first time. It'd be great to have somebody come in and do all the work.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want. The business has become, people are doing less and less, and they're wanting more and more, because that's just, you know, that's what business does. It tries to maximize the profit from the natural resource. The problem was, I was the natural resource.
Right.
and that's the problem with the music business today, and in a big sort of sense, is that the artists are the, you know, the renewing resource, and unless they take care of themselves, they just get ground up and spit out. What happened was that a deal fell through, and I was like, well, I'm just going to do this record myself.
Okay.
And I was going to and do it through Mark. It was a different sort of record than the ones that I'd made before, because there was a lot more of a sort of pop influence on that record. The records that I'd done before had been much more Americana, blues, roots sort of style recordings.
Right.
I think we played a lot more with the differences, the different things that you can do in the studio. I was really exploring the studio as an instrument, as opposed to just being a guitar player or a harmonica player or a singer. And so that was really exciting. And working with Mark was excellent.
Right. And that started a long collaboration between you two, right?
Yep. We did, we worked together for the live record that you mentioned before, USA, Unrepentant Schizophrenic Americana.
Yes, there are some songs on Love Songs For and Against that I guess you could say are a little bit more on the pop side. And you know, I'm pretty sure I've played every tune off of this album on the show at least one point. But, you know, like Long, Long Time is a great one that has kind of a wider appeal. But one of my favorite tunes on there is When It All Comes Down, a song that you wrote in 97, but then ended up putting on this 2005 release.
You could say it's kind of creepy because it's dealing with the apocalypse.
Sure.
And trying to figure out, you know, like, when it all goes down, who do you want with you? If you were to imagine a bad situation, not necessarily, you know, like, practically, like, well, I'd like a couple of professional MMA fighters and, you know, a really good sniper.
Yeah.
And a guy who carries a machinist kit in his backpack.
Yes.
And somebody who can, you know, and a chemist who can, you know, just clean water. But more from a situation, what really matters, who you love. I wrote in the liner notes a long time ago on Can You Live Without that what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to balance my optimism with my realism. You know, I'm trying to be realistic and optimistic.
Nice.
To be positive and pragmatic at the same time.
Not always easy.
No, it's a balancing act. It's all about trying to find how do you make that work? How do you not let life break you and not become the monster that you're fighting? Can you do that? I don't have any answers here.
Sure.
I'm saying that that's the question.
Yes, indeed. That is one of life's questions for sure. Well, I think this is a great one, and who knows, you know, according to some people, we might be playing this tune when it all comes down here towards the end of 2012, not so far away, but regardless of whether the world ends this year or not, this is a beautiful tune that I get requests for from time to time here on the show, and I want to spin it right now. When It All Comes Down by my guest Guy Forsythe from the album Love Songs For and Against. And stick around, we'll come back for more discussion with Guy after this.
There's a different time a-coming, a bad taste in the wind, the panhandle's burning, and a winter's blowing in. Hard times for the stranger, no one keeps them anymore. No one learns their lesson, they just bar the door. The trees on the greenbelt turn a Lipton brown. Justice just in letter, no salvation from the weather. I hope we are together when it all comes down. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. On the day the phones go dead before the hungry come around. When the big boys lose their manners and the children torch the town. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. Tell John he was right. Carry what you can from the city's stock of stories, stacked till they can't stand. Ramona has a closet full of cans she keeps around. She said she's scared of starving when it all comes down. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. The day the phones go dead before the hungry come around. When the big boys lose their manners and the children torch the town. Hope I am with you when it all comes down. No one cares for the fallen and the clinic's doors are locked. No one here remembers Cassandra's cries are mocked. Beaten plows and pistols planted brothers neath the ground. A hollow harvest rises, it all comes down. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. On the day the phones go dead before the hungry come around. When the big boys lose their manners and the children torch the town. I am with you when it all comes down. I hope you understand why I've chosen now to call. I know that we agreed to let that conversation fall. But there's different times coming, hard times to be alone. And I hope can hear me. I hope you find this stone. There's just what you brought with you and can wrap your arms around. If the rapture doesn't take you, I will not forsake you. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. I hope I am with you when it all comes down. On the day the phones go dead before the hungry come around. I'll leave nothing but a letter for those I would be found. That I've gone to be with you when it all comes down.
The multi-talented Guy Forsythe joins me tonight on 88.9 KETR. You're listening to Notably Texan. And I mentioned multi-talented. You are a multi-instrumentalist. I don't even know if this is a... if this is right to try to make you list off all the instruments that you play, that may not be fair, but what you play a lot of instruments, right?
Well, I've played stringed instruments like guitars, banjos, mandolins for a long time, mostly playing guitar and sort of like fingerstyle Americana blues-based guitar. That's the thing that made me pick up the guitar the first time and really try to learn how to decipher it and pick it apart, listening to old Robert Johnson recordings and just trying to figure out what was going on. And when I first started, it was before the internet. Now, if you want to learn how to play like Robert Johnson, go on YouTube.
Yeah, you can study every nuance, right?
Yeah, you can see 100 different people interpreting the same tune 100 different ways and get an enormous trick bag. So that's a great tool. Anybody who is listening right now who's gone, well, I'd like to learn how to play guitar, but, you know, lessons are expensive and I don't know when I'd be able to do it. I taught myself how to play by listening to music. And anytime I got a chance to watch a guitar player, I tried to pick up one thing. I want to see one thing that they do. And next time I pick up my guitar, I'm going to see if I can do that one thing. And if you do that and you keep focused on it, if you want to learn how to play, go on YouTube. There's probably somebody there who's already put up a great video that will get you in the door.
Tell you, these kids today don't know how good they got it.
I agree that it's changed the way we perceive music, but there also was something really interesting about trying to learn music off a record where the only information you had were the two paragraphs on the back of the record.
Yeah.
You know, like, who are these people? What are they playing? You know, like how did they tune their guitar? What are they using to play it? What is that sound? And that is something that I never want to lose sight of, because the mystery is more complicated than the reality, because the human element is the part that makes it mean something to us. You know, because my life is not perfect. I like my old ripped up jeans. I like my coffee cup with the chipped lip. I like the rust stains on my van.
Yeah.
You know, like, because that's what life is. That's what gives you a place in time, not just in distance and space, but it gives you a location in your life. There's something really beautiful about that.
Man, you're blowing my mind here. I got to tell you, Guy, you're an incredibly intelligent person, and more people out there should be like you. That's all I'm saying. Here I go, blowing up your ego again.
Well, thank you very much. There's a lot of time spent in the van late at night thinking about this sort of thing. I'm a musician. I really want music to matter, and I know there's been times when it has fulfilled great needs, but there's a lot of times when you feel lost and you want to have a connection with something, and maybe you can't find that with another person, with your girlfriend, with your wife, with your family, with your friends. You know, we work hard. We work a lot of long hours, and even working with other people, we spend a lot of time alone. And music has been a real savior for me, and I know from talking to people that it has been that for other people too.
Without a doubt.
Music can be a great social lubricant. You know, there's something great about music, which is sometimes nothing more than baby, 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 baby. And, you know, because it's rhythmic, it makes you happy, you know, like that's what the voodoo drum sex ritual is all about. It's about, you know, like it's about elevating your state and creating a place where you can play as an adult as well as a child. It also is a way that we communicate mysteries and poetry. It's the way that we consume poetry now.
Yes. Yeah, and nobody even knows any poets pretty much these days. I just saw a joke the other night about how the only poet's name anybody can come up with is Maya Angelou these days, you know, because... And that's...
Who rocks?
Yes, indeed.
Can I ask you a question? Website, iTunes, ripped from your buddy's pod, burned to a blank on your sweetie's laptop.
Guy Forsythe is our guest here on 88.9 KETR's Notably Texan. Guy's website, by the way, is guyforsythe.com, F-O-R-S-Y-T-H. It's one of the cooler pages I've seen in my years of visiting artists' websites, and I know it's been up there for a while now, but I still get a kick out of going to your website and watching all the goofy stuff that you do up in the corner of the page.
But don't do it on your iPhone. It's a flash site.
Uh-oh.
I know. The technical world changes quickly.
It does.
And eventually we'll redo the site and do it in such a way that it'll be available on all platforms. We do this stuff ourselves. I didn't code the site, not an IT guy.
Right.
But the ideas for it and a lot of the vision was stuff that we came up with.
It is cool, and you can see Guy doing everything from slicing things up with a samurai sword to playing the singing saw, which I wanted to talk to you about, but, man, I've already been talking to you so long tonight, I'm feeling like I need to let you get back to your life here, but you got to look into to Guy's performances with the saw, because there's just not enough artists who play the saw these days.
Yeah, you don't have to be a very good saw player to be the best saw player that most people ever see. Guitar is a lot harder.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you get up in front of somebody with the guitar, everybody has seen or heard the greats shred on guitar. You see somebody pull a guitar in on stage or pull one out of a case across from you, it could go so many different ways.
That's true. But with the saw, like, most people don't even know what I'm talking about when I say that Guy Forsythe plays the saw.
Anything that you can do on stage that gets people to just, like, stop what they're doing and for a moment be like, what exactly is it that I'm looking at?
Yeah.
is valuable.
No doubt about it.
Texas Fried Music, smothered with gravy on Notably Texan.
And she was beautiful as an ambulance at midnight, sweet as a practice promise, hungry is a video arcade. And I was lost as a coyote on Main Street, desperate as the last day of summer, running like a dog on a chain. She said, I like you. And I said, well, I would like to too, but don't we get away. She took me in, she chewed me up and said, I hope you'll stay. And I hollered, where will I find her? 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 And then a leg up on the throat of the competition, and my head in the game. And I tread a little softer when I walk, and there's a little bit of poison in my talk, but the results are the same. 'Cause I've been struggling to put a still point in my head, as well as someone who can take the blame.
Howdy, music lovers. This is Guy Forsythe. You're listening to Notably Texan, 88.9 KETR.
Cover my retreat from the sun.
Guy's latest album, The Freedom to Fail, is out now. And you've noted in the liner notes that you've pretty much dedicated this album to your daughter. How old is she now, by the way?
She's 5. This is the first studio record, like original studio record, that I've made in 5 years, or like 6 years, I think. And that's because I've been busy.
Yes.
And my daughter is the best thing that I've ever done. And it's not a children's record.
Sure.
But although I do not feel the need to explain myself to everyone, I really feel a need to explain myself to my daughter.
Sure.
And it's not stuff that I hope that will resonate with her for many years.
Right.
In making this record, I started from the perspective of, I want to do this for her. I wish to make these songs. I wish to make something that would be of value specifically to her. But ultimately, it needs to be useful to everyone. As a musician, you're in the service industry. There has to be something that you're providing for people in order for them to cut off a piece of the steak and give you a piece.
Yes.
So I hope that it does that.
Well, it's great. I certainly was not disappointed when I got this in, man. I've been kind of counting the moments since your last release for when's the next Guy Forsyth album coming out. Now, I got worried for a few years there, man, but I'm really excited that you've got this one out.
It's important to not miss certain times in your life.
Well, yeah. I would say that's a worthy cause. You don't really get to go back and relive those first 5 years of your kiddo's life, you know?
Yeah.
Fans of Guy's previous releases are certainly not going to be disappointed with the eclectic nature on here. You've got everything from a traditional Hang 'Em Low to a notably Texan song called Red Dirt, and one of my picks Played Again. I'm sorry if this is a cheesy question, but what is your favorite tune on your new record, Guy?
The one that I'm most proud about is a song that I wrote with Brian Keene called The Things That Matter, which is a really simple song, really, written for a couple days. We wrote 6 songs in 2 days, and we were pretty exhausted, and we were working on his car so I could get to the airport to get home. And I got a call from Kerry Wallum about Stephen Bruton, who at that time had been battling cancer.
Right.
And had taken a real turn for the worse. We put down the tools and picked up the guitar and wrote that song. I am of the belief that music comes through you. You know, you can think that, you know, like, oh, I wrote this song, I sat down and I wrote it, but it all comes from somewhere.
Yes.
And in ye olden days, they would call that your muse. You know, you either had a good muse or you had a bad muse, and that's useful to an artist to put it outside yourself, because that way, you know, you can go ahead and sit down and write. And if you write a bad song, it's like, well, you know, I showed up. My muse didn't show up today.
Yeah.
But I showed up. I think that getting the bad news about Stephen and the stand for music that Stephen Bruton was, sort of for a moment, we had this moment of clarity. And the song is about the things that matter. And I guess if there's one song that I'm most proud of on the record, I'd say it would be that one.
I only want things that matter. I only want things that you can share. Don't give me diamond rings, all those so-called finer things. They don't matter when they are not there. I don't need more clothes if I'm not free. I don't want love that I can't feel. I can't use a pretty lie just to help me pass my time. Love only matters when it's real. I only want the things that matter. Now I've met a man who made $1 million.
how he sits and watches lovers passing by.
My guest, Guy Forsythe, is going to perform Saturday nights in Greenville at Municipal Auditorium. I'm not sure. I haven't, of course, checked every gig you've ever done over the years, but is this kind of your first time to play in this neck of the woods? I know you've played over in the DFW area, but here in Northeast Texas, I don't think you get a lot of stops out here in our part of Texas.
Yeah, I used to play at Rick's and Tyler as a regular stop.
Sure.
But I haven't been up there that much lately.
Sure. Well, this is exciting. We're really glad that you are playing out here. And have you ever shared a bill with Travis Tritt before?
I haven't shared a bill with him, but he did come in and jam with us at Antone's a long time ago.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he was like playing in town, and after he did his gig, as lots of people have done at Antone's, just, you know, stopped by, brought his guitar, and we got him up on stage, and we played some blues.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, who knows? Maybe he'll remember that. So if you two bump into each other at the show, that's awesome. Well, man, I can't thank you enough for the time that you've spent with us tonight. And we've got the holidays coming up. I'm looking forward to getting to play the album that you did a few years back with Carolyn Wonderland, Fireside Songs for the Soul. I love that one too, man.
Thank you. Carolyn is a pure source of American music.
No question.
Yeah, she's like a 100-year flood.
Yeah, I mean, between the two of y'all, when I saw that you two had done this album together, I was like, this is just kind of the epitome of the great stuff that's come out of Austin these days, and I wish I could play it all year round. That's how much I love it.
Keep Christmas in your heart all the year.
Indeed. Guy, I sincerely thank you, man. Honestly, did not intend to talk to you for all of this time, and I really appreciate your generosity with your time and your stories. And man, I look forward to talking to you again here on Notably Texan.
Sure, anytime. I appreciate the ear.
Guy Forsythe has been the guest tonight here on Notably Texan. Again, he'll perform on Saturday in Greenville at Municipal Auditorium. You can find out everything you'd like to know and maybe some stuff that you didn't want to know over at his website, guyforsythe.com. Guy, thanks again, and best of luck in all your endeavors, man.
Thank you very much.
On my own, far from home, to find out what I'm made of. Up ahead, the traffic slowing. Back in KC, it's still snowing. No one knows me, where I'm going.
Thanks again to Guy Forsythe for joining us tonight. Also, a shout out to his manager, Ray Flowers, for helping line up this interview. Remember that Notably Texan feature interviews and everything you hear on your station are made possible in part thanks to your contributions. So please give generously right now at KETR.org. Just click support this station. I'm Matt Minke, your host and producer, saying thanks for listening.